Thank you, Dan, and I do indeed appreciate your kind remarks and the opportunity to bring to you a message which I feel strengthened through in our trip to New York. And being accompanied by Nathaniel Yates and the beautiful and inspiring reunion that we had, all the services. And I'm thankful to be able to be home once more without incident, and my new pickup ran fine. Got about 4 miles to the gallon better than I had expected and what they told me. And so all in all, I feel very blessed in this effort. As you see from this picture, I'm sorry that my camera was, I didn't take my bag with me and I didn't have the right lens for this inside photography, but hopefully you'll be able to make it out. This is the Six Nation Air Corps Museum that I've mentioned once before, I think, to you. Eli Tarbell introduced Victor and I to this museum and the curator, and one of the unexpected events was that when he introduced this, he introduced the owner and curator, John Fadden, and to us. And when I heard the name Fadden, there was a bell ringing off in my head. And as soon as he got through with the introductions, I asked him if he was acquainted with or knew Ray Fadden. And he says, yes, he was my father. That is amazing, because Ray and my father were very good friends back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And he was one of those that had helped my father. Now, Ray was not a full-blooded, well, he's not Indian at all. I'll get to that a little later. But he was active in the Pan-American League of Indians, of which my father and mother were members back then. That was the real opening for them to go to Mexico on that first trip. But starting here, this is Nathan, or Nathaniel. He goes by both, Yates. This is John Fadden, and this is his older son, Don. And John and he has three sons, and they pretty much operate the museum. And this museum was conceived and started by, can you hear me when I turn around? Guess I won't turn around now. This museum was started by Ray Fadden, the father of John, who is the present owner and curator. Ray started this about 1960, and he was a longtime friend of my parents, Clarence and Angela Wheaton. Ray was a descendant of the McFadden clan of Scotland way back. Ray was an officer in the League of Pan-American Indians. And as I said, they were instrumental in helping my folks get to Mexico in 1952. And Victor and I were introduced to John at the museum by Eli in 2010, when we both attended the New York reunion. Since then, I have made friends with John and his family. I email them frequently, and each time I'm in New York, I visit them at the museum, which is way up on top of the Adirondack Mountains, not too far from Lake Placid, but just enough to have gotten me well mixed up on this trip. I thought I remembered how to get there, even though I've never gone there the same way twice in the five trips that I've made. I spent all day Thursday last week trying to find it by memory, and didn't find it. And then Friday, Gretchen made me a map of it from one of the mapping programs, and the directions how to get there, and I was successful that time. And Nathaniel and I had a great visit and enjoyed the time up there. This year I've had the good pleasure to take, as I say, Nathan with me, and we have bonded in very strong, confident friendship. And all of these photos that I'm going to show you were taken in the museum. And again, I apologize for the photography. But I hope they're clear enough to show you the beautiful workmanship that the beaders and painters were gifted with. This is a picture of Ray Fadden and his wife. I don't remember his name, her name. Ray passed away a few years ago, but Mrs. Fadden is in a nursing home at Akwesasne, which is where the Tarbell home is, the big home in the church. And she celebrated her 101st birthday about the July 9th, I'm not sure of the exact date. And she is a Fullwood Mohawk and in good health, except she has no memory for a very long span. This is the grandfather of John, and he painted this picture of his grandfather in his doctorate robe, and I don't know what his specialty was, but he was very well respected in that part of the area. And there beside the picture is a group of, yeah, that would be help. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Can everybody hear me? Okay. These are the rackets, we would call them, but they call them baskets, that they play the ball game that they all like so well. It's very similar to the ball game that the big ball courts are made for down in Yucatan and in the ruins throughout that part of the country. Gotta go back here. I will get back.
Let me just use your back arrow.
Yeah, I need to go back about this one. That ain't working. Oh, that's not good. Get me
just
back
from
something.
Here. Just back up.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah, done. This is the picture of the painting that was drawn by, painted by John Fadden. And up here you see the Six Nations of the Iroquois Confederacy, which is called Akwesasne in Mohawk Iroquois language. This is a longhouse, and this over here is the Tree of Life. And one thing you notice here is it only has five sections in it. These represent the individual clans or tribes that are associated with the Confederacy. This is what they currently are, but this is where they started. And over the top is the eagle, which is the spiritual carrier of messages between the tribe and the creator. This is the partridge, which is the Mohawk symbol or bird, similar to our eagle, and some tribes use the turkey. And this area right in here is what they call the drumming area, which is where those of you that know about partridges know that during the mating season they beat around and call drumming. to attract the females. And here is that same tree symbol, but here you see all six of the current participants in that Tree of Life, they call it. And this is a beaded panel. It's about 4 feet across and almost 7 feet high. This was done by Ray Fadden back after he established this museum in the 60s. And I understand that it took him some 3 years to do this. And this is like the wampum belts. One of the things you hope you can see is that these lines go back and forth continuously from the top to the bottom. And in there is their history as he had learned it with his, he was a school teacher, and he's the one that began the real education of the Mohawk people into the white man's culture of religion, or not religion, but education and sciences. And he was very dearly loved among them, and he was a very active member with them. And that was one of the things Lorraine or I, either or John or I, neither one, realized that that floodlight was messing up my flash. But I didn't learn that until after I was gone. This is a model of the longhouse. You can see back here, that's a camera of another visitor that's taken a picture. I wish it showed up as good as it does on my screen. This was a gift to the museum from one of the very old museums over in Europe. They had replaced this. This is the way they built them with, these are birch sapling trees and columns, and this is actual birch bark over the top. This is not just the shredding that you see on birches as they peel off. This goes clear down to the pulp, and they peel it clear off and make these large panels. And the museum is made in very similar fashion. It is also not rounded like this, but it is covered with real, actual birch bark. And I didn't get a picture of it this time. I have pictures of it somewhere in my collection. This, you can't see it very well, but this is a cradle board. And on it is, I'm not sure what kind of skin, but it's beaded work. And that's all flowers and things that infants enjoy being around. And all of this other is more of the, this is painted. This is not beadwork here, but it painted. Down here is a longhouse. Over here is an eagle. And this is their history. It's the way they first began to write, actually. After so many years of war, they had forgotten all about writing, and they could only talk. And so they began to draw pictures of their activities, and you can see various groups and different animals and locations. And these are things that they recorded to begin with from their memory, and then they began to get into the beadwork that was more permanent and more expressive. This is a view of the one of the main rooms. There's four of them actually along here, and beginning right here, right along that top, is a wampum belt that is continuous 48 feet long, and it goes around three walls of this room. And it also relates the history from way back. Now, in this book, which is titled The Iroquois Culture and Commentary by Doug George Canantillo, who is one of the leaders of the Mohawk tribe, or the Iroquois Confederacy, actually, up there, wrote this book. And among the other things that they have found is that, and this is scientific and researchers that have delved into their culture and their method of recording events, they did not attempt to, even as the Book of Mormon didn't, give dates. Now, the Book of Mormon does give dates for years from the time of Christ or from the, well, they didn't have it before Christ in it, but we have attached that to it. And, but what they do is they use the moon and the eclipses very strongly. And what they have found, scientists who have, and historians who have gone back through these records, have found that the Iroquois Confederacy was first established in the year 1142. This is in August 31st. And the reason they can give it that tight a date is because there was a total eclipse. I believe it was at Syracuse where they met to agree, or the day they signed, actually, the various tribes signed the Iroquois Confederacy of Peace. And so, and then along here are more wampum belts. Here's another panel of paintings. Here's some more different types of ball sticks. These are history too. Some are painted, some are pencil or inked. And in here, this is the official panel of the Confederacy. I don't know the exact meaning of each one of those, but that's what that is. This is a gift that was given to that museum by the, I believe, the Aleuts in Alaska. And these are death masks they put over people's faces when they die. And they have been given, the museum there has been given old wampum belts that were taken to Europe way back in the 1500s and 1600s, and both by museum, given to museums, and some individuals had kept them, and they have been given several of those back to this museum, and I don't know which ones they are, but they are on display. Next time I go up, I hope I have more time to get into those details, but that's how respected this museum is in the world. And John and his two of his sons give lectures worldwide and all over the United States on the Iroquois and the peace plan that, according to their history, oral history, the great creator sent, and it's here in this book, I read it this afternoon, that part of it. I still haven't read the whole book yet, by quite a bit. The great creator sent a woman to the earth, and she bore, she was a virgin, and she bore a son who was the great peacemaker upon the earth. And He visited the Iroquois area during the time of Hiawatha. They have another name, but that's who he was. And this dates Hiawatha way back, much earlier than many used to think that he was. This is a whole string of, you can see here, those are leather straps that go down the legs of ceremonial dancers, and these here happen to be turkey feathers, but back here there are eagle feathers, and this is a wolf hide, one of the symbols of their tribe, one of the clans. This is a mink, mink in summer. It turned white in the winter, I think. And here you see a whole lot more of the eagle feathers and more of the panels back here. Sorry, these other things don't show up good. I've got a few other pictures here that will show some of them now. This is boards, panels that are hinged back here. There's about 20 of them in here, and they John Fadden made these to teach his classes with. I remember back when I was in grade school, our teacher had similar panels to teach various subjects with. These are not beadwork, but they're artwork and drawings of their history. There's all kinds of memorabilia up here in the ceiling. This is a painting by his youngest son. In fact, all of these are by his youngest son, who is quite a renowned artist worldwide. He sells a lot of his material overseas here. And here is more. Here's that 48-foot wampum belt coming on around the room. You can see different, a few animals and other things in some of the closer pictures. These down here, again, are more wampum belts and more. They have a funny way of kind of clustering their subjects rather than paragraphing them like we do in the order. And you can see these lines come up, go through different ones, branching out. I don't know what these all mean, but he does. This is a picture of, and this was painted, by John, although it could have been by his son. And this is of John's grandfather, who was a French, he worked with the French. He was Scottish by blood in the fur trading history of that area and up in Canada. One of the things that I didn't know before, that Brandon told me in one of our side discussions, was that all of the Iroquois have dual citizenship in Canada and Mexico. Canada and the United States. So they can own property on either side. They can vote on either side, and so forth. this was, he was a Canadian, this gentleman. This is not a very good map, but, I mean, it's a good map, but not a good picture. This is Lake Erie, and this is New York, and on up above here, a ways, is Akwesasne and the Canadian line. And this is the original Iroquois Confederacy land holdings, and this is the east coast over here. This is something that some of your ladies might get a kick out of. This is an oak mono, or matak. I think that's the one that makes the bowl. And they grind their corn, their wheat, and other grains in this. And instead of using a stone rock like the Southwest does, they have a bowl about this big round, and with a handle, and they grind it around that way. One of the things that I understand about it too is they don't get the sand that they get down in the Southwest with the rock mono on the top. They get, what they do get is a little bit of wood grain, which they digest and becomes a part of their diet. Here on this side is several pairs of snowshoes back there. And I've used them when I was out west and up north, these look like great ones. This is a list of all of the Iroquois Confederacy veterans from World War I to the present. They are going to have to add on to this board because it's getting some numbers. But they are very proud of their veterans, and this is a list of all of them by tribe. And this is a collection of various arrowheads and spearheads, all in a very nice arrangement. And I'll show this bottom one here. This is the arrangement of using arrowheads and other stones, flint, and so forth, and obsidian. They used a lot. And down this side is, well, both sides, are the clans. This is the deer clan, and you can see the deer here. This is the partridge, and you can see him here. This is the herring, and you can see it here. And down here is the bear, and you can see it here. Now, this is Eli's clan. Then over here is the snake clan, and you can see the snake. This is the beaver clan, and you can see the beaver here. This is the turtle clan. Now, I say clan, it's a symbol, and I'll get to that in a minute. None of them use, at least in the Iroquois Confederacy, use the turtle as a clan. And I'll explain that in a little bit. This is the wolf clan. And then this is kind of the arrangement of their area. These are represent mountains, and that part of the area of very, well, all of their lands up there in that part of New York and Pennsylvania are very mountainous. They're not western mountains, but they're They get pretty steep and pretty deep. And then up here overlooking all of it are two eagles flying over. They are messengers to the Great Spirit. Do that again. Okay. We'll learn that after a while. This is their, the Confederacy beaded representation of their Confederacy. This is a medicine wand, and I'm not sure why the teeth are here, but this is, I'm not sure whether that's an antler set piece or whether that's some other material. These are both turtle rattles, which are used in their healing ceremonies as well as others, but especially in the healing ceremonies, they shake them over to run the bad spirits away. And then, sorry again that I didn't get the head of this turtle, but their legend is that when the earth was first discovered or found by this spirit lady that came, it was water, and she found a turtle that was floating on the water, and she managed to get a little bit of soil and moss and things together, and was able to get it to grow a little, and the bear and the wolf protected now this is not a woman, this is a man, apparently her child. And then this is the eagle, the protector of all of the land, and then you say he's the bald eagle also. And that is their very abbreviated legend of the creation. Now this is over at Tara and Brandon's new home over on the river. And this is a very beautiful doeskin gown. I don't know whether she used this in her wedding ceremony or she could have, but I don't know. This is a beaded breech cloth. And this is hanging on the wall beside the fireplace over here. A very, very beautiful room, very beautiful home. And this is a painting that hangs over their fireplace, which is just below. And you can see their fire and the smoke ascending up. And this is the bear and the wolf protecting the tribe. I don't know what river this is supposed to be, but I wouldn't be surprised at what it represents, the St. Lawrence River or one of the rivers from off of the mountain. But I thought that was also very beautiful. And then this is hanging on another wall of their home. These are two beaded wampum belts. I say wampum, but they are belts that are worn by the participants in ceremonial dances and so forth. This is the Bear Clan symbol. That's Eli's symbol. This is a white feather. I don't know what it is. I didn't get a chance to ask Brandon any questions about it, and I don't know what these other features are around it, but that was what one of the highlights of our trip, and what we were able to learn and take Nathaniel up, and he enjoyed his visit up there. We were able to make very good friendships together. When we first got in the car, well, it took him about 20 minutes for his mother and his brother to coax him into getting in. And then we started down the highway, and he kept saying, well, I'm not sure I ought to go. And I said, well, that's you to decide. And we got about 50 miles down the road, and he said, turn around, we've got to go back. So I said, well, I've got to take you to Independence, because that's where your mother is. She was here at Bible school. And so we turned around, and then he started to, well, I'm not sure we ought to go back. And I said, well, that's for you to decide. You decide. And about 30 miles down the road, well, he said, pull off at this exit and let's go on. So I pulled off, and I pulled up there, and I talked to him for about 20 minutes, be sure that that's what he wanted to do, because I said, time's running out, and we've got to get on down the road. And he said, that's what I want to do. So from there on, when he first got in, he wouldn't look me in the eye. But after the first day, well, he looks me now in the eye. We talk together. He's finally gained confidence in me that I'm not going to lie to him. I'm not going to hurt him. And I'm going to tell him the truth. And this in itself was a wonderful blessing to me. Well worth the tribe, the time and effort to make that trip with him, and to be able to help him out in a very difficult time that he's having. And I praise the Lord and thank him and each of you for your attention. May God bless you.